We made this.
Hi, we dig music, and because of this, we've kept the music in our podcast at a low background level because we believe that you should support the artists by buying their records and going to their gigs. If you want to hear the songs in full, we've made Spotify playlists of all available music featured in each episode, which you can find on WeDigPodcasts.com. You can also join in the discussion on Facebook and Twitter by searching at WeDigMusicPcast. Finally, if you dig what you're hearing, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, write a review if possible, and tell all your friends that you think would enjoy it. Anyway, enough of my yakking. On with the podcast. Hello, welcome to We Dig Music. My name's Colin, and with me as usual are my comrades and co-hosts, Ian.
Hello.
And Tracy.
Hello.
It's our third anniversary of doing podcasts this month, so this is a special episode where it's a bit like our Christmas episodes where we're going to do a countdown of our favourite songs from a year. This time we have chosen 1990.
I would like to take a moment to congratulate anyone that's still with us. Well done. If you've stuck it out for the whole time, you're
absolutely
a tolerant person. Well done.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
And if you've joined us along the way, that's cool too.
Yeah. Thanks for that. We appreciate it.
We do.
And if you dig it, tell other people, if you know other people that will dig it as well. We always want more people, because that's even better. But if not, we appreciate you.
Yes, you are enough. Don't let anyone tell you anything different. You.
Absolutely.
You right there, you are enough.
Not you. You. That one. Yeah.
No, all of them. They're all enough.
Okay. Oh, fair enough. Are you sure? Even that one?
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That one has untapped potential. You don't know.
Yeah, fair. So, 1990, I was 8. So, a lot of the music I wasn't really listening to at the time. Most of the songs we're going to be like talking about are ones that I've come along to later. Just to explain, for if you've not heard one of these
episodes
that we've done before. So we've each chosen 10 of our favourite songs from 1990. We have sent them secretly across to Ian's wife Lydia, who has then compiled playlists of the other two persons' songs, so we don't know who has picked what, although I am absolutely certain I know every single one, which one's Ian picked and which one's Tracy picked.
I think there is a fairly easy... It's pretty easy to tell between mine and Tracy's choices. I started trying to do yours, and then I was like, I second-guessed myself to death, basically. There was a few that could have been either of you.
So we've scored them. So our own list of 10, we've given our favourite one 10 points and our least favourite one 1. So obviously 10, 9, 8, 7, 6 and so on.
I think people will understand how numbers work.
They might not. You know, we cater for all abilities and all levels. The combined list of the other two people, we've scored 20 for the highest and it goes down to 1 on that. So that way it means nobody just gives the most points to their own favourite and it hopefully makes it a little bit fairer. That's how we did it for the Christmas one.
It seemed to minimise the amount of ties because that was the main bugbear that we got, is that we'd be like, and in fourth place there are... 4 songs. 7.
Yeah, it's... we still got a few, but we got less than we were getting when we started doing it.
Yeah, it's not a perfect system, it's just an upgrade.
Yes, definitely. Basically, the kind of stuff I was into in 1990 was mostly things like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. I wasn't massively a music head at that point. I was just getting into Hendrix and... I think I like Jeff Wayne's War of the Worlds album, which I used to listen to quite often. But other than that, most of these are stuff I've got into at a later date. What about you guys? Ian? You were 12, weren't you?
Yeah, round about. I'd got a few singles and stuff like that I believe at this point in time
your aha phase had already begun.
My aha phase had began as soon as they existed, basically.
Yeah.
Yes, as soon as I first heard them. I think I already had Hysteria by Def Leppard at this point in time, which was pretty cool. I was going through a fairly reprehensible hip-hop phase at this point. like kind of white boy hip-hop, you know? Not good hip-hop.
Excellent. Tracy, what about you? You were 74, weren't you?
Something like that. So 1990, in the summer of that year, I resat my A-levels because I'd failed them the year before. And in the October of that year, I went to uni in Preston. So big crossover. And I was kind of into goth and Grebo and indie and 60s. It's all over the place. But for this exercise, I tried to stay true and only pick songs that I was definitely listening to then, not things that I've picked up since.
Oh, I did not do that. I did not do that at all.
I think in the entire list of 30 songs, there are two that I would have known at the time. And I'll let you know when we get to them.
Yeah, there's only one that breaks my rule. I know I definitely didn't know the song until at least a year later. But the rest of them I was definitely listening to.
I think there's like two on my list that I definitely would have known at the time.
Cool. Tracy, so you wanted to go into, like you did last time, about bands that were formed in 1990 and mention some of those.
Yeah.
You've got a list or something?
A list off Wikipedia. So bands
Indeed.
Formed, apparently, in 1990. I dispute the first one. Bikini Kill. Wikipedia.
Yeah, you disputed that, but you're wrong, because they were formed in October.
I just thought they were around earlier, that's all. Anyway, Bikini Kill, Catherine Wheel, Curve, Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy.
Excellent.
The Prodigy.
Yeah,
I got
Prodigy.
Those down.
Yep.
That's like the more fashion-based version of the Prodigy.
The Prodigy. excellent.
Spiritualized form from the ashes of Spaceman 3. The Stairs, fantastic. Liverpool, garage 60s kind of band.
Right.
And Stereolab.
Cool. You've missed on that list Opeth, Mard UK, or Marduk.
Stop it, Colin.
Tracy called them Mard UK last time and it was amazing.
Yes.
And Swedish National Socialist pop legends Ace of Base.
Ah.
Who were formed that year from the ashes of various Nazi bands that they kept very quiet.
Yes. Band split in 1990. For the comedy value alone, Anal Cunt. We always like to mention them.
Did they split?
They may have split, but they definitely reformed again because they were putting stuff out for... Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of their output is after that.
Oh, okay.
I think they only stopped doing stuff because Seth Putnam died.
When Seth Putnam...
Right.
Yeah. Snuffed it.
also split that year, apparently, Campervan Beethoven.
Right.
Deja Voodoo, a Canadian band I liked. John Peel used to play them a lot.
This is another... obviously, Campervan Beethoven I know, but there are a lot of bands that Tracy knows and no one else does in this list, again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we were all fetuses.
This is true.
Bando Ballet apparently split in 1990.
Good.
And the Wolfhounds, although they have reformed recently, and Exmal Deutschland.
Right, cool. I have heard of Exmal Deutschland, but not the Wolfhounds who have reformed recently. So, because we're all still on lockdown and recording in various towns across the West Midlands, we can't do what we normally do, which is we've got an envelope each, with a sealed envelope with the list that my wife Helen's compiled of the scores. So we've got a special guest with us to read the entire countdown. So it's 1990, so the chart countdown at that time on Radio 1 was done by either Bruno Brooks or Mark Goodyear. but they were busy. So my wife Helen is on the sofa next to me with a microphone. Hello, Helen.
Hello.
Hello,
making
Helen.
Her podcast debut on this one.
Yep.
It is nice to have 100% more estrogen on this podcast.
I'm here with you, Tracy.
Except you're not, because you're socially distancing.
No. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, you're here with me.
Not just socially distancing, I'm like town distancing.
Yeah, definitely taking the distance seriously there by being in an entirely different city. Right, so are you guys ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Shall we start the countdown, Helen?
We can do.
So?
So, at number 30, we have, with a total of... I'm assuming you want to know what the scores
were.
Yeah,
I want to know what the scores are.
So, with a total of 13, is Primal Scream, I'm Losing More Than I'll Ever Have.
Okay, so what's the score breakdown on that? That's one of Tracy's.
Yeah. So, 100%.
Call it...
Tracy gave this 5.
Right.
Colin also gave this 5.
Yeah, out of 20.
Out of 20. And Ian gave it 3.
Yeah, because this is shit Primal Scream.
It's stones by numbers, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and this is the song that was famously remixed by Andy Weatherall into Loaded.
Yeah, which is much better. It definitely needed the remix.
Perhaps, but... I prefer this song. It's, yes, it's Stones by Numbers, but it's them at their heartbreak peak. It's a beautiful song.
You going for fucking Tracy Bingo already?
There's going to be a lot of it.
Let's go for the next one.
Well, the next one is our first joint position, and it is the only one that is 3 songs in a joint position.
Don't tell us that. That's spoilers.
So these all scored 14.
Right.
So we have The Lars, Timeless Melody.
Right, just tell us that one.
Okay.
We'll talk about that first.
So that one, Colin gave 7.
Yep.
Ian gave 5.
Yep.
And Tracy gave 2.
This is another Tracy pick.
Yeah. I wasn't really a massive Lars fan, actually. I just adore
this
song.
No one is. He keeps standing up all the time.
I couldn't leave this off my 1990 list. It was a big
you
song
should've.
For me that year.
It was shit.
To be fair...
Just wait till we get to some of yours, Ian.
As the Lars go...
Don't fucking care about your opinion on mine though, Tracy. We know this.
As the Lars go, this is their best song.
No.
So.
Never got... It's better than There She Goes.
Way better.
Honestly, I really like There She Goes.
It's a good pop song, but...
This fucking intricate arrangement, man. We tried to cover it once and it was painful. So difficult to learn.
But it's...
Which one? This one or There She Goes?
There She Goes.
Is Ian likely to have tried to do a cover of Timeless Melody?
He should.
He's very unlikely.
He won't. Because he doesn't like it.
The Lars are held in really fucking high regard. Mainly by people with absolutely no fucking taste whatsoever. I've just never got it at all. Lee Maver's vocals really fucking annoy me for a start. And it's just generic as fuck. But it's one of their 2 redeemable songs, but everything else that they put out, the rest of that album,
I think the thing about The Lars
shite.
Is that whole legend thing, the one album and then they'd split.
Yeah, but loads of bands have done that. Doesn't mean that they're good.
No.
Dark Star are infinitely better. Dark Star put out 1 album and then split. But they don't get the fucking kudos that the Lars get, despite being a billion times better.
A billion?
Yeah.
A
billion,
million,
billion. A squillion.
Squidillion.
Yeah. Helen, what's the next one?
So, also scoring 14, we have Loop and Vapor.
This is fucking shit. I hate that one.
What?
See, I actually like that one.
Colin gave it 1, Ian gave it 7, and Tracy gave it 6.
Space rock, drone rock, kraut rock type stuff I like, but it shouldn't be boring, and this is really fucking dull.
Your mum's dull.
You see, Colin, I don't know if it was you or Ian that thought the telepaths were dull. when I had them
both
in
Both of us.
I think it was both of us, because they're really fucking dull.
Right. But, I mean, I can hear a direct line of influence from Loop right through to the Telepaths, and that's why I love them.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you can hear a direct line of influence, then they haven't got enough influences. Defeated with your own argument.
And the album that this one's off, the closing track on it is Be Here Now, and it's a billion times better than the Oasis song or album.
Would that be difficult?
Considering Be Here Now wasn't actually on that album, so you've probably never heard it. It was B-side. You don't know that. But anyway, Helen, what's the next song?
And next we have, also with 14 points, Sea Urchins, A Morning Odyssey.
Tracy, are all of yours...
Mine! We'll just get mine out of the way and then I'll go to bed or something.
I wrote a one-word comment for this and it was just shit.
Both Colin and Ian have scored it 2 and Tracy gave it the full 10.
Oh, Tracy, this was the one you put your fucking hopes on.
No, I had absolutely zero hope of either of you two enjoying it. But it is one of my most favourite songs of all time.
So you like this more than Ultra Vivid Scene, who have got they're one of your acronyms on your Twitter thing?
Yeah, but Sea Urchins isn't a TLA, so it isn't a...
A what?
Three-letter acronym. Except they're not actual acronyms, but...
Okay. They're initials, not acronyms, yeah.
Yes.
It's got, there's some vaguely pleasant sort of jangly guitar parts, and I like the reverby piano sound, but I don't like the singer's voice, and it's really fucking unmemorable.
I mean, they're a Birmingham band for a start.
So are the Twang.
They were a mix of indie and 60s. I mean, I think this song in particular is quite Small Faces.
Small levels of interest also.
I got into them the year before. I randomly met someone at a bus stop in Birmingham who asked me for directions to a venue and he was going to see them.
Did you fancy him?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
See, my insightful questioning just gets us to the bottom of everything.
Yeah.
So they're on this list because you thought someone was a bit fit.
And because I thought the band were amazing and they've become one of my most favourite bands ever since.
Okay.
Fair enough. At least somebody likes them.
Yeah.
Helen, what's next?
So now we come to number 26, and this is the point that I realise I forgot to ask Colin how to pronounce a couple of things. So we have... Belle Biv Devo?
Belle Biv Devo.
Yeah, like
Poison.
I'd scored this quite highly.
You know what got me into this song? What got me into this song was Scrubs.
Okay, cool.
This is the song that Turk auditions for the air band.
It was GTA San Andreas that I know it from. Helen, what's the score breakdown?
So the score breakdown is Colin gave it 12, Ian gave it 2, and Tracy gave it 1 with a total of 15.
It's really, really Prince influenced, which is never a bad thing as far as I'm concerned.
And that drum loop is fucking great, that snare pattern.
Yeah.
It's just so good, so danceable.
I really like the bit at the start of the song where they're all really politely asking each other if they're ready.
Yeah.
This is the only artist on the playlist that I don't remember at all. Not even one spark of recognition.
I think this would be one of those that was bigger in America.
Yeah.
Well, I looked them up, actually, and they were members of the earlier band's New Edition.
Yeah, they were half of New Edition.
New Edition were great.
Yeah.
That was Bobby Brown's the most well-known member of New Edition, wasn't he? And it's the whole New Jack Swing kind of sound that was absolutely fucking massive, particularly in America in the early 90s, late 80s.
Yeah.
And this was one of the sort of big New Jack Swing hits. It's not something that I'm normally into at all, but I really like this track. And weirdly, because I'd heard it on the radio stations in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, so that's like nearly 20 years ago-ish when came out. It's not a radio station I used to put on very often on there, because there's...
No, it's just one of those default ones, isn't it? You get in and it defaults to that one, and you're like, oh.
Yeah. And you'll leave it on for a bit, but then skip it when something else comes on.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
always to the 90s station. Always. 90s
metal. A few weeks ago in sort of everybody being on lockdown, but really nice weather, so everybody's sitting in their gardens. I was sitting in our back garden with Elodie in the paddling pool, and a house about five doors down was playing this at really, really high volume. And I'm sitting there going, what's that? I know that bass line. What is it? Oh, shit! And recognised what it was. And that's the first time I think I've ever heard it anywhere outside of GTA. So, yeah. Helen, next one.
Okay, so coming in at number 25, we have Ultra Vivid Scene, Staring at the Sun. And the scores on this one are Colin gave it 3, Ian gave it 4, Tracy gave it 9, and it has a total of 16.
Yeah. I wrote more than one word for this one.
Really shit?
No, I wrote, it's very average 90s indie, nothing ultra or vivid about it. A lot of scene, though.
I put. I know they're one of Tracy's favourite bands, but it's not really grabbing me. Pleasant, jangly indie pop, but nothing to really sort of grab onto. So, Tracy, they're one of your favourite bands. Go for it.
Yeah, one of my favourite bands of all time. It was a close call between this one and one of their big-ish singles, Special One, which had Kim Deal guesting.
Okay. On bass or vocals or both?
Vocals. But it was really hard to pick. I love this whole album. Although the 1988 debut album was my favourite.
Pity we're not doing 1988, isn't it?
Yet. Yeah. We will get to it at some point.
I'd love to do a 1988 one.
Well, I don't think we've announced it officially yet, but as of 2021, we're going to do one of these episodes every 3 months. So we'll have the Christmas one.
Because the alphabet is dead.
You were there when we fucking discussed it.
Didn't miss a memo or something.
God. Do you remember when we had that fucking meeting and we were talking about what we were going to do in the future? You know when we made the list of all the next load of bands that you then said you'd got no memory of making as well?
Yeah. You were totally there. I remember you being there.
I'd forgotten that we were going to do one of these every 3 months. You know when we did the scoring for this one, Helen had to email me back and say,
No,
we're not doing the bonus point anymore.
Yes, I know.
No, I missed that one as well.
Teeth. Never mind. Senility is a cruel disease.
But yeah, every 3 months we're going to do one of these, so we'll do an 80s one for March, I reckon, next year.
Yay.
Because we've not done
88
an 80s one yet.
So it'll be near my birthday, so we don't get to do shit years on my birthday.
Perhaps that'll be the September one, whatever every 3 months is or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Right, what's the next one?
So at 24 we have one of my favourites from the list, which is Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby.
How is it so low? What the fuck? Tracy, have you fucking killed this one?
Yes, absolutely, I killed this.
This is evidence that Helen has not fixed the results, because that would be a lot higher. This is one of the two songs that I remember from the time, obviously, because it was a massive hit.
Same.
What are the scores breakdown for this one, Helen?
The scores are Colin gave it 10, Ian gave it 4, and Tracy gave it 3.
So it's both of you two that killed this one off. I really, really like this track. It's cheesy as fuck, but it's a really good pop single.
It's actually not quite as like squeaky clean lyrically as you'd expect, though, is it? That's the thing.
No, it's not. But what I particularly like about it is I really enjoy playing it when I do acoustic gigs, because I do Under Pressure and then go into this as a medley. But I don't do it anywhere near as well as two people on this podcast, because Ian does a really good version of this
and
Helen does as well. So
there we go.
Not Tracy.
Not me.
You might do. I've just never heard you do it. But one of the reasons that I like this so much is when me and Helen were in America on our honeymoon, we were driving back from Disneyland, both absolutely knackered, and Helen was rapping it at while we were driving, and it was
about 1 o'clock in the morning, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you know, that was cool.
That's ace. Apparently, Queen and Bowie didn't get any songwriting credit until way after the song had become a hit.
It's because it's just
a big legal battle.
Yeah.
It's not enough of a sample, I don't think. I don't think it's enough of a sample. It's a duration, isn't it?
There's contention on there. I can't remember the outcome of the court case. I've not properly looked into it. But basically, Vanilla Ice and his writing team's defence was that they had altered enough of the melody for it to be its own thing, and Queen and Bowie were arguing that they hadn't. So... Mm-hmm. I think he then had to... They did get a writing credit later on, so that would suggest he was either an out-of-court settlement to do that, or Vanilla Ice lost.
I mean, I think we talked a lot about sampling and these kind of cases when we did the Beastie Boys.
A little bit.
I guess it's the way with a lot of sampling, though, isn't it? It doesn't get credited.
It didn't back then at all. No. It does these days, because lawyers are fucking hot on it and they'll pick up on it straight away and sue you into oblivion if you don't.
This song was originally a B-side. It was the B-side to Play That Funk Music.
Play That Funky Music.
Sorry. Yeah. Princess cut off the margin, sorry. But it wasn't getting any airplay, and there was one radio station played the B-side instead, and it became popular really quickly, so all the other radio stations started playing it too.
Awesome.
Nice.
And off the strength of it, apparently Public Enemy tried to get Vanilla Ice signed to Def Jam.
Did that not work?
No.
I don't know what label he was on. I've never owned it. I've just learnt it myself. And it's a proper novelty track. It's, you know, I don't have any desire to listen to any of Vanilla Ice's other work apart from that nu metal album that he did later on.
I had the whole album.
Yeah.
I loved it at the time. Not the nu metal album, the actual To the Extreme.
Yeah, Helen's got it on cassette, because I've definitely found it in a box somewhere.
I've probably got it on cassette somewhere still.
Right, what's the next one, Helen?
So at number 23, we have the first of Colin's songs. The Black Crowes, Twice as Hard.
I'm fine with that. I only gave it 1 point.
You did.
What was point breakdown on that?
So, as you say, you gave it 1 point. Ian gave it 11 and Tracy gave it 6.
Cool. This was on there because this ended up on my list as a reserve, because both of you two had chosen one each, I think, that I picked. So I ended up substituting them for... This was one of the ones that I substituted.
Sorry, Colin.
Well, you wanted to pick the Sea Urchins too.
No. Unsurprisingly, absolutely fucking no. But yeah, I like the whole album. Shake Your Moneymaker is great, and I was a bit torn of which track to choose. I didn't want to go with Hard to Handle because it's a cover, it's really well known, and I think they deserve more recognition for their own songs. The slide guitar playing on it's fucking great, and Chris Robinson vocals are as good as ever.
Yeah, so. Like I couldn't fault it. Which is why I gave it a decent score. Like, I dig it.
Yeah. Cool.
Just not as much as
really
other stuff.
I never really got into them.
I'm not surprised by that, Tracy. It's a little bit too... Although, actually...
They're kind of Stones.
Exactly. They're not a million miles away from Primal Scream, are they?
They're not. At this time, no, definitely not. But, I don't know, it's a bit 70s rock filler for me.
Says the woman filler, who put some fucking 70s rock filler on here.
Yeah, that's the one.
Right, next one, Helen.
So this is our next joint position. So at number 21, we have Extreme and It's a Monster.
That's one of Ian's.
Fucks.
I knew that wouldn't be Tracy's. What's the point breakdown on that one?
Colin gave it 9.
Yeah.
Ian gave it 8 and Tracy gave it 2.
Cool. I didn't think Tracy would mark this one particularly highly.
No, it's not. This is proof that my list was in no way me going, I bet I can win. Like, it was me going,
no, none of them was, I don't think.
Neither was mine.
Oh, is it? Well, it's clearly obvious that that wasn't Tracy's list. That wasn't Tracy's game plan. But yeah, this is never going to be one of Tracy's favourites, is it? But
the playing is just too fucking good.
Oh, no, Bettencourt's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I had He-Man Woman Hater on my long list, so that nearly got on my list.
I fucking love the guitar riff for this, though, like...
Yeah. I used to have the album on cassette years and years and years ago. This isn't one of the tracks that I particularly remember sticking out as being a favourite, but obviously I remember it from listening at the time.
Yeah.
This song has got the best use of parentheses in a song title I've ever seen.
What, mid-word?
No, because it's called It's a Monster.
But it's It.
Yeah.
A Monster, so it's mid-word.
A Monster.
That's what I said, it's mid-word.
Yeah. It's great.
It is excellent. And lots of fun.
Was this song not rather overshadowed by More Than Words?
No. Of course it was.
On the album, though.
I mean, like...
In sales terms, yeah. Absolutely.
As far as people that just listen to the radio are concerned, yeah, kind of. But it's definitely not... Like, More Than Words isn't the best song on the album by a fucking country mile.
Helen, this is one of your favourite albums. Which song do you think is the best one on the album?
Don't ask me that.
It's More Than Words.
If you're going with sappy fucking ballads, like Song for Love is way better.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'd agree with
I
that.
I don't know that one.
Oh, you should listen to it, Tracy. You'd fucking love it.
I probably would.
It's very emotional.
Yeah, but it's technically well played, so that's going to put her off.
This is true. It's also got an absolutely fucking storming solo in it again. Because Nuno.
You can't not have one with Nuno Bettencourt. That'd be a
complete fucking
waste.
Where's that extreme song with the shit guitar solo? Oh, there isn't one.
Right, so that was Joint 21.
Yep, Joint 21 with Revolting Cocks, Beer, Steers and Queers.
So I just find it really funny that you just said that.
I'll say that again.
It's part of the reason I put it on the list was because someone would have to read it out.
Thanks.
So
I remember liking this a lot more 20 years ago.
Yeah, same.
It used to get played at the Jailhouse loads, but I've got a feeling, I think it might have been the Drop Your Britches remix that used to get played a little bit more, because there's a little bit more variation in it.
See, this was the one that I got, because when I was in college doing computer repair, I rocked up wearing a Nine Inch Nails shirt, and the lecturer was like, hey, do you like industrial music? And I was like, yes, I do. And he was like, I'll do you a tape. And this was on it.
That was the guy that got you into Liebach, wasn't it, as well?
Liebach, Einstersend and Neubarton.
Yeah.
De Krupps. Yeah.
Awesome.
Am I allowed to say that this one is like Front 242 and be right for once?
Yes, because it's industrial.
No, well, also because this was a side project formed with Al Jorgensen from Ministry and Richard 23.
I don't think Richard 23 was still in the band when this was put out.
He wasn't,
out.
No. He'd quit by then.
But yeah, it's... The thing for me is it's really similar to Land of Rape and Honey, the title track from an earlier Ministry record.
Yeah.
And that's a lot better.
You know, it reminds me a lot of the stuff that Pop Will Eat Itself were doing on their album the year before as well.
Similar kind of vibe, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, and they weren't industrial as such, but yeah, definitely similar vibe.
They were industrial adjacent, I would say.
Yeah.
They, you know, particularly later on. Dos Dedos Mi Amigos, is that how it's pronounced? Or Los Dedos Mi Amigos? The one that's got Ich Bin Ein Ausländer on it.
Ah,
that's industrial.
See, that's very industrial.
That record. Yeah. But that was mid-90s, I think. Was that 95?
I can't remember.
Do you want to know how it was scored?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, yeah, tell us how it was scored.
So, Colin gave it 4, Ian gave it 1, and Tracy gave it 14.
Because it sounds like Front 242.
And Pop Will Eat Itself.
Yeah.
This was definitely my kind of thing.
cool. The skit bit at the start is a bit annoying.
Yeah.
It's you know, on the sort of level of hip-hop skits that you're like, I can see that amused you when you put it on the record, but nobody wants to listen to it every single time they put it on.
No.
Right, cool. So does that mean that's the first third done? So we're on number 20 now?
We are.
Okay. Yep. What's next?
20 is Entombed, Left Hand Path.
One of Tracy's. Unsurprisingly, one of Ian's.
Yep.
What's the score breakdown on that? I gave it 6.
Colin gave it 6, Ian gave it 5, and Tracy gave it 9.
Wow. Tracy gave it more
it's
than I thought.
It's a fucking great song.
It is.
Entombed are fucking anything. Wicked.
It's got a real Slayer sound, actually.
Sort of. It's a bit more death.
Yeah, no, I get that. This was the full-on first outing of the chainsaw, isn't it? Like the proper Entombed chainsaw sound.
Yeah. Is it HM2?
HM2 maxed out.
HM... Yeah, which is a guitar pedal for those.
Yes.
Unaware.
I didn't know much about them, so I looked them up.
Swedish.
Swedish. And there's a review that referred to them as one of the big four of Swedish death metal.
Yep.
The other three being Dismember, Grave and Unleashed.
And they are the... When you think of the big four of thrash metal, obviously you've got Metallica being much bigger than the others. Entombed are the Metallica of that big four.
Yep.
And because that,
like, Dismember the Slayer, basically.
Yeah. Mm.
The guy that wrote the review actually preferred Unleashed.
I've not heard Unleashed. I'm pretty sad
no,
about that.
No, neither have I.
I don't know them.
I really Dismember you can rectify fucking that. Great as well.
With Entombed, I really like their stuff from about, I think it was like 6 years later.
To Ride, Shoot Straight and Speak the Truth.
Yes, which is where they went. They mixed their death metal sound with a lot more sort of rock and roll.
Yeah,
they called it death and roll. And it's
shocker.
There's a track on there called "Damn Deal Done" that's fucking brilliant. The whole album's great. There was a limited edition version of it that had got a bonus CD with a load of covers on it. That's really good as well. But yeah, that's the Entombed that I like. But this track, you've got some awesome sort of riffs at the start. But then about 4 minutes in, it all goes very horror film soundtrack, sort of very Halloween influenced.
It's fucking great.
And it's so good for the rest of the song. It's just like, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I just fucking love this. Oh, so good.
Next one.
So at 19, we have Teenage Fan Club, Everything Flows.
That is so much higher than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I like Teenage Fan Club, and Tracy absolutely loves Teenage Fan Club.
But I hate them. Like, I thought I'd got enough rage to bring them down.
Did you give them 1?
Yeah, I did. And that's the most I'd ever fucking give them.
I gave them 13 for this one.
And Tracy gave them 7.
I'm not even going to make a joke about giving them 1, because I definitely wouldn't give them 1 in that sense.
The surprising thing about the inclusion of this on my list is this is the one that breaks the rule.
That you weren't into at the time.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of Teenage Club until at least a year later. But
To be fair, Tracy, that rule doesn't fucking matter, because you, as Tracy, could not put a Teenage Fan Club song on a year when they'd released an album. Particularly when they'd released Catholic Education or one of their really, you know.
It's not one of my favourite albums of theirs.
It's not. I don't like it, but it's Everything Flows is one of their one of their classic songs. It's not one of my favourites at all. I like some of the riffs on it, but to be honest, it's nowhere near up there with some of the stuff on Grand Prix or Song from Northern Britain.
And which is why they're my favourite albums and not Catholic Education.
And it's a Norman Blake track. I always prefer Gerard Love and Graham McGinley stuff anyway. All of my favourite ones are pretty much the other two. So
I think we're pretty much in agreement on most fan club stuff.
Apart from, I don't think they're the greatest band in the entire universe. I think they're brilliant, but I don't think they're... I wouldn't put them in my... They probably wouldn't be in my top 30 bands of all time.
They wouldn't be in your Twitter bio TLA list.
No, because I've got too much... I haven't got enough room to put stuff in there because it's nearly all podcasts.
Well, yes.
So, yeah, what's next, Helen?
So at number 18, we have Sisters of Mercy and Vision Thing.
It's one of Ian's.
Or is it more?
It's more, not Vision Thing.
It's more. I wrote Vision Thing because I put the album down and you forgot to cross it out. Yeah. Yeah, the album's Vision Thing, the track's more.
Yeah. I did nearly put Vision Thing on.
So did I. That's one I very nearly had on my long list. I gave this 14 points, though. Helen?
Ian gave it 3 and Tracy gave it 7.
Cool.
I think it's further proof that I'm the least goth in this podcast.
Definitely, despite that photo that's
album.
Amazing.
Wow.
I haven't, actually. I've got Floodland and I've got Slight Case of Overbombing, so I've got it on that.
Yeah, I've only got the Slight Case of Overbombing.
Yeah. Oh, you need to get Floodland.
I was never much of a Sisters fan, you know. I was more into The Mission.
Sacrilege.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Avalanche will be offended.
My God, that fucking storm that you had. It's here now.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm in the top of a high building.
You probably won't get struck by lightning.
Well, we can hope. I'm looking around to see if there's any taller trees and shit like that, and there are, so it's okay.
Good, you'll be fine. I like the fact that we've got to the goth section and the storm started there. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
That is. Tony James was on bass at this point, which is pretty cool. But I've got to say, I did love the Patricia Morrison era Sisters.
Yeah. I think I prefer... Floodland is my favourite Sisters of Mercy album, definitely. Yeah. But I like this track. I love the synths on it. And the thing with nearly all Sisters of Mercy songs is they sound fucking brilliant in a goth club.
Yeah, like, I know this is probably Sisters sacrilege to dig this, but, like, this is my favourite era, like, the really overproduced, super melodramatic.
Cool.
It's just great.
Cool. Right, next one.
OK, so at 17 we have Public Enemy, 911 is a joke. And
what's the breakdown?
So Colin gave this 9 and Ian and Tracy both gave this 8.
That's still pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, actually, no, both of yours, that means it's lower than halfway. This is one of my favourite Public Enemy tracks, even though this was one of my choices, obviously. It's essentially a Flavor Flav solo track. Chuck D is absolutely nowhere to be seen. In fact, he's wandered off onto one of the other songs that we've not got to yet. I found out when I was reading the other day that if the samples on this track, so going back to what Tracy was saying earlier about clearing samples, if the samples had been legally cleared at the rates they would have cost in 2010 when this was worked out, Fear of a Black Planet would have made a loss of $5 for every copy sold.
Wow.
Because it's one a bit like Paul's Boutique, where the whole album is just a collage of samples.
Yeah.
But it's great. And this is probably their... I think this is... Other than maybe Harder Than You Think, this is probably their poppiest song, I reckon. But,
Duran Duran did a cover of it.
I do, which led to the greatest headline in any music magazine ever. Because I think it was The Enemy... did a review of Duran Duran's covers album that this was on, which had the headline, 021 is a joke.
Nice.
Which is fucking genius.
Yep.
Great headline.
Yeah.
I saw Public Enemy at Phoenix Festival in 95.
Awesome. They were headlining,
as
that,
usual,
weren't they?
Though, I don't remember much about it.
I've seen them two or three times. I've seen them... No, I didn't see them at Glastonbury because the Rolling Stones were better than I expected them to be, so I stayed watching the Stones. But I've seen them at another festival somewhere, and I've seen them at Rock City, and they did this as an encore at Rock City. And it was great. Right, Helen, what's the next one?
So we have our next joint position now at 15. We have the Cocteau Twins and Ice Blink Luck.
Which is one of Tracy's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really like what's this. What's the points break? Yeah. Break down.
So the points are Colin gave it 11, Ian gave it 16, and Tracy gave it 1.
That's Tracy's fault it's so low.
I totally screwed this one.
Well, it was still in your top 10. It wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah. It's weird, though, actually. This one only really made it onto my list because there was a number of others I couldn't include because they weren't on Spotify. There was a Valentine's EP in 1990.
Right.
And there was a couple of other things that I like more than this song, but because of my self-imposed rule of wanting it to represent stuff I was actually listening to, I left off loads of other stuff like Codeine, Blake Babies, Galaxy 500.
Right.
Bob Mould solo I didn't get into until years later. Fair enough. Flaming Lips, in fact. So.
Yeah. I really like this. Cocteau Twins are one of those bands that I just know odd tracks by, like Pearly Dewdrops Drop and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This is way more conventional song than most of the other ones. It's, I mean, other than Liz Fraser's vocals, which are really, really distinctive, the backing could almost be The Cure or New Order, sort of in the background, particularly the high-up chorus bass line on it. And it's great. I really, really dug it. I had a listen to the full album earlier, Heaven or Las Vegas, and there is a track on there. There's a track called Wolf in the Breast that has a vocal line stolen from another. It's one of the songs that just missed out on being on my list, which Here's Where the Story Ends by the Sundays. And I had to look up which one came out, because they both came out the same year, which one came first. But the Sundays record came out in January and the Cocteau Twins one came out in September, I think. So, and it's not... It's such a distinctive vocal line. It's the verse part, na 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 na, which is really unusual and really distinctive. That I can't imagine it could have been an accident. But I like the Sundays track better than that one.
I don't actually know this Cocteau's album as well as I know the earlier Treasure and Victoria Land albums.
It sounded pretty good.
I'd never clocked that Sundays thing.
Yeah. I did a quick Google to see if there'd ever been any legal action or anything, or nobody else seems to have mentioned it online as far as I could see. But, it sounded absolutely uncanny to me. Right, next one, Helen.
So the one sharing position with that one, if I can get my words out, is Slayer and War Ensemble.
Which is one of Tracy's... No, it's one of Ian's.
Heathens.
How cool. Cocteau's and Slayer joint position.
And Colin gave this one 8, Ian gave it 7, and Tracy gave it 13.
Cool. I nearly had Dead Skin Mask on my list.
This is way better than Dead Skin Mask. Dead Skin Mask's so overplayed, like, and the riff's just like... that fucking riff and the verse riff. That string skipping triplet monstrous thing.
Yeah, for me, the standout little bit of this song is Lombardo's drum fill about halfway through. Is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Which Dave Lombardo's drum fills quite often are. It's what he does. But that's the bit of the song that really stands out to me and makes me go, fucking hell, that taste.
I'm so much more into Rain in Blood and South of Heaven. And I wouldn't have heard this album as much because I moved away from home in 1990. And this is something, you know, my little brother would have been playing, so I wouldn't have been exposed to it as much.
Yeah. Cool.
But this album is the one that completed the trilogy of Rick Rubin produced Slayer albums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they worked with him later on again, but
did
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think
you know,
they probably
we should do.
Did he? I think he did. He do Diabolus and Musica?
Maybe I couldn't tell you. Yes, we should do a Rick Rubin special.
We really do need to produce a special on Rick Rubin.
We could well do that. He's done some very good stuff. Awesome. Right, Helen, next one.
So we're down to number 14, and this is my favourite on the list.
I know what it is then.
They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse in Your Soul.
Yeah. So this is one of my picks. What was the scores?
I actually remember this from the time.
This is the other one I remember from the time.
So Colin gave it 5, Ian gave it 6, and Tracy gave it 18.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
That's how I thought the score
really
might go.
Got on my tits this time. Like, I remember it, and I was like, oh, I love this song. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, it's a bit fucking relentless, isn't it? But not in the way I like things to be relentless.
It's quirky.
I don't remember chorus happening quite as many times as it does.
It's not my favourite of their songs, though, actually.
It's not mine.
Don't Let Start was always my favourite.
I love Don't Let Start. I love Anna Ung. I love Dr. Worm, but none of those were released in 1990. No. It's always really easy to know that this album was released in 1990, because Flood starts with, it's the brand new album from 1990 at the start. So. So I knew that was definitely one to go in the list, but... this is one Helen really got me into. I knew it at the time, but Helen introduced me properly to They Might Be Giants, and I've been to see them live since then. I've bought loads of records. They are a very, very strange band, absolutely fucking nerdy as fuck.
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah. It's absolute nerd rock, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool.
Wiki says about that song, actually, that it contains unconventional music elements for a pop song, including an atypical snare drum pattern and modulation between four keys.
Yeah.
There's your quirky.
Indeed. And it's essentially prog. Right, Helen, what's the next one?
So at number 13, we have Pixies, Dig for Fire.
That was one of mine.
Colin gave it 4, Ian gave it 9, and Tracy gave it 17.
Cool. It's my favourite track on... Is it Bossa Nova? I'm trying to think which Pixies album it is. It's one that I don't like
Bossa
that
Nova.
Much. Yeah, I very rarely put Bossa Nova on. I'm going to put Surfer Rosa or Doolittle on over Bossa Nova
pretty much
any time. But I really like this track. The verses in it particularly are great. There's loads of like space in the interweaving guitar and bass parts with it. And the main thing that this song always reminds me of is being at Reading Festival years ago with our friend Liz, who was, as Liz quite often is, quite drunk at the time. And she was sitting there with a little plastic spade from the Ben and Jerry's stall, digging in the dirt, singing this in a really weird voice. And it's just, it was a very Liz thing to do. And it's totally stuck in my head.
It's a strange woman, is Liz.
She is. Completely insane, but lovely, yes. What's your general thoughts on this one, Ian?
I don't really have any general thoughts on it. I didn't really dislike it. I just...
No.
It's all right. Basically.
Cool.
Sorry.
You know, I found that I'd got the Pixies compilation, the recent one, Indie Cindy. I don't remember buying it. And I put it on. And it's just really meh.
They're not Pixies anymore.
They're not. Deal or No Deal.
It's Kim Deal or No Deal, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even though Paz Lenchantin is very, very cool and was in Perfect Circle at first. But
really?
Yeah. Yep. Right, next one.
So we're jumping to position 11 because we have another joint one.
Okay.
And Alice in Chains' Man in the Box.
That was one of mine.
Honestly thought this was going to be higher.
I didn't, because Tracy would absolutely fucking hate it, I think. What were the scores?
Colin gave it 7, Ian gave it 20, and Tracy gave it 5.
Yeah. Tracy's mentioned before that you really don't like grunge type stuff, so.
Not a lot.
No.
I had a scan of my CD shelves, and I do own Dirt.
Dirt is their best album, I reckon. Mm. It's you might like the MTV Unplugged one or Jar of Flies Sap, the acoustic one.
Yeah.
I thought I had some copies of my brother's albums. Yeah. I thought I had the 2018 album, Dirtier Fog, but...
Yeah. But
couldn't
find it. This For me, this is a absolute Jailhouse classic from the Jailhouse in Tamworth that we always used to go to.
Yeah.
And it's the best use of a Heil talk box since Living on a Prayer.
Yep, yep. Also, that fucking chorus is so hard to sing. I hadn't even thought about it, and then it was on a compilation or video thing of the hardest vocal lines to sing, and I was like, it's not that hard.
And then gave it a go.
And I was like, oh, it's very hard. I feel like I've just blown my tonsil out. Fuck me.
I always like how distinctive Alice in Chains' vocal harmonies are as well, because you've always got Jerry Cantrell. It's basically a third above Layne Staley's vocals.
Yeah.
I don't know any of their post-Layne Staley stuff. I've heard it's good, but I've not investigated any of it. But, yeah, I dig them. They're great. But, yeah, Dirt from 93, I think it was, is their
92.
Better album. 92. So when we do that year, that will probably feature in my list again. It's a case of choosing which track, though. Right, next one. So that's a joint one.
Yep, so joint with Alice in Chains, we have Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, The Ship Song.
Which is another one of mine.
So Colin gave it 2, Ian gave it 10, and Tracy gave it 20.
Aha. These are all over the place today. I don't think we've had as much of a fucking scattergun of scores before.
No, we have not.
But yeah, as we discussed in the recent episode we did on Nick Cave, we all dig Nick Cave. This is one of his probably sort of classic songs. This is always going to be... It's very often in live sets and that kind of thing. And it's one of his sort of greatest hits, basically. But even though I don't know if it was actually a hit, but it's one of his more well-known...
I think I'd have gone with the Weeping Song from this album, though.
Fair. This is another one... this is because it's the one I gave 2 points to that wasn't originally on my list. This is one that was substituted for one of the other ones that one of you guys chose.
You know what? In a recurring theme of me and festivals, Nick Cave played Glastonbury 94, which I went to.
Yeah.
And I don't remember seeing him. Although, I do remember having a lot of trouble getting between stages and just getting stuck in bottleneck crowds.
That can happen
so
at Glastonbury.
Perhaps I didn't see him.
Yeah.
I never went to Glastonbury again, actually. It terrified me.
I was going to say, you don't like big gigs.
I don't.
You think the Sunflower Lounge is too big.
Almost.
Yeah. No, I've seen him at Glastonbury, seen him at Latitude, I've seen him in Birmingham. And he's always fucking fantastic. Definitely always worth going to see. What's the next one, Helen?
So we have another joint one at position 9.
Oh, so we're in the top 10.
Top 10.
Yeah, it's top 10. So we have LL Cool J, Mama Said Knock You Out.
Oh, fucking hell. This is Tracy's fault then.
Tracy.
You're right.
Yeah.
Colin scored it 20, Ian 9, and Tracy 4.
This is one of my favourite hip-hop tracks of all fucking time.
It's because it's great.
This was on my list, and this is one that I swapped for Nick Cave.
Ah. Ah.
So, yeah.
Couldn't get much different.
No.
What, they're both
great. But I like
great.
Both. Yeah. There's two types of music, Tracy, good music and bad music.
Yep.
And I don't think this is bad music.
But...
It's just... I've never paid any attention to him. I heard him a lot in the mid-80s.
You see, you just... You're meant to love him. That's what the LL's for.
It stands for...
Ladies love.
Cool exactly. James.
So
James Todd Smith.
You just did it fucking wrong.
Yeah, you're breaking the rules.
I'm going to tell him. And he's going to be pissed at you.
I know.
He might bomb a town.
Yes, exactly.
Next one then.
So that was joint with Pantera, Cemetery Gates.
Oh,
awesome. That was
the
one
Batman
of Ian's.
Riff.
Yes.
No, it wasn't me screwing this one, I'm sure.
Well, I gave it 15.
Ian gave it 6 and Tracy gave it 12.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, it's in the top 10. No one screwed it, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It is in the fucking top 10. It's in the top 9, in fact.
Yeah, it's like it's one of their best songs, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely one of Anselmo's best vocal performances, anyway.
Absolutely. And I listened to it. I hadn't got all my notes down yet, so I listened to it really late night last night on headphones.
Yeah.
And you know when you're listening to stuff late at night and there's no sort of distractions and you can notice extra things? There's extra guitar lines in there in the verses that I had never noticed. There's really low in the mix little melodic bits that I just never picked up on before. And it's fantastic.
It's beautifully produced, yeah.
Yeah.
The intro is kind of strange, though. It seems so disconnected from the rest of the song.
Yeah, they did that a couple of times on that album. Hollow is quite...
Yeah.
But
this song basically just makes me think of Ian's radio show, Box of Rock.
It's because this was one of the ones I would play fairly regularly, yes.
Yeah.
Because it's Ace.
Yeah.
It is. What I like about these two being together in joint ninth position is that these are the only ones with a Spotify explicit lyrics label on them.
Are they?
Mm.
I'm surprised there aren't more.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, this podcast will have one because we say cunt.
Definitely.
Cunty, cunty, cunt.
How has Revolting Cocks, Beer, Steers and Queers not got a
Because it doesn't actually have any explicit lyrics.
It's just got an explicit band name.
Yeah.
Unless they're talking about chickens. Fair.
Yeah, exactly. Fair. They might just not like...
Chickens are revolting.
Right, Helen, what's the next one?
At number 8, we have Fugazi and Repeater.
Oh, this should be higher.
I gave it 6. Not my favourite Fugazi track.
Oh, it's mine.
So, yeah, Colin gave it 6, Ian gave it 13, and Tracy gave it 15.
Cool. Fugazi are so fucking influential on loads of bands that I love.
Yeah.
Like, At the Drive-In, Refuse, Cursive. Therapy, because this track... It's got to be a massive influence on Teeth Grinder for the drums.
God, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the clattering snare drums. There's like screeching guitars, frantic bass. And then you've got that the clean guitar bit in the chorus, which is almost like calypso. I've always dug this. When I used to be in a band called The Shift years ago, Nick, the singer, copied Repeater, the album, for me. And so that was the first time I heard Fugazi, and this track's always been my favourite of theirs. Waiting Room's the track that obviously is probably their most well-known one.
Yeah.
Repeat has always been my favourite of theirs, definitely.
I like what I know of theirs, but I don't know them very well. They were huge amongst the skate kids in Preston that I knew around this time.
And rightfully so.
Yes.
What's next?
At number 7, we have The Sundays and Can't Be Sure.
Right, this is one of Tracy's, because it definitely wasn't one of Ian's picks.
No, I really liked it, though.
Yeah, I thought you would.
Yep, Colin scored it 16, Ian 15, and Tracy 4.
Cool.
I mean, it's jangling, floppy-fringed indie at its best.
Only a lot best, because Ian actually likes it, and all of those would normally put him off.
Yeah.
Apart from the jangling.
Harriet's voice is just so perfect.
See, this is the kind of indie I like.
Yeah.
It's well-produced, which helps.
It's nicely produced. Everyone knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
No one's being deliberately shit or whatever.
Yeah, really, really beautiful reverb on the guitars.
So this is the track... Or this is the band that I had to replace one on from Tracy's list, because I'd got Here's Where the Story Ends on the list.
Yeah.
Which I had on a... I've never really investigated much of The Sundays, despite always loving that song and Summertime, which was their big hit single off their third album. So that was in 97, 98-ish. They had a big hit single with Summertime, and... This sort of dance duo did a cover of Here's Where the Story Ends, and I bought one of those Best Anthems Ever compilation CDs.
Yeah.
And it had got The Sundays version of Here's Where the Story Ends on it. And loved it from that, but never really investigated further other than those two songs. And I listened to the album earlier, Reading, Writing and Arithmetic, and it's fucking beautiful. It's really, really good. I'm definitely going to listen to both the other two records and listen to at least that one a lot more, because it was really, really beautiful.
Cool.
Anything else?
I'm starting to make predictions on what's the top now.
No.
I've made a prediction right from the start what I think will be number one, but I could be wrong.
I think I know what will be number one.
You always say that, though.
Yeah, you...
I know, and I'm never right.
So perhaps I'm not then, because I think you'll have said the same. But anyway, Helen, what's next?
At number six, we have The House of Love, Shine On.
Right, which is one of Tracy's.
Gosh, a lot higher than I thought it would get.
I love it.
Colin gave this 17, Ian gave it 12, and Tracy gave it 8.
Yeah. So this one, it's another well-produced indie track, so that's why Ian's going to have scored it fairly
high
as well.
I don't dislike indie music.
Yeah, exactly. It's when they're lethargic, can't sound like they can't be arsed, and they've produced it badly is what puts you off, innit?
Yeah, like if you don't sound like you like your own fucking song, why should I like it?
So this is the only song by House of Love that I know, but I've always liked it. This is another one off a compilation I had in the 90s. Do you remember those Shine compilations? They were nearly all sort of Britpop.
Oh, obviously they'd be on a Shine compilation.
Yeah.
So they
were on the first one of them, which I had as a bootleg cassette from Polesworth Market in 94. But it's the same cassette that got me into Dinosaur Jr. as well. Because it had got Feel the Pain on there. But yeah, this has always reminded me, it's kind of like the indie equivalent of She Sells Sanctuary by The Cult. But there's also a bit of The Church's Starfish album sort of sound in there. Which I think I've told you to listen to that before, Tracy, because I think you'll dig it. Because you don't know it, do you? Starfish.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I think you'll like that.
So this was off their second album. Yeah. Both their first two albums were both called The House of Love. And this one was off the Butterfly album because it had a butterfly on the cover.
Yeah.
I never saw them live back in the day. And so when they did their debut album at the Roundhouse last year, 2018.
Yeah.
I wanted to go and see it so much that I didn't go and see Teenage Fan Club do the night two of their Creation Years gigs in Birmingham.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, you've seen Teenage Fan Club about a million times every year.
And the night that I skipped to go and see House of Love was the night with Grand Prix and Songs from Northern Britain, which are the ones I'd seen live most at the time anyway.
Although that's the one I would have wanted tickets for.
Yeah.
But yeah, were they worth missing it for? Were they good live?
Yes. Cool. They were amazing.
Excellent. A really, happy really ending.
Absolutely.
Right, next one.
So we have another joint position here. So at 4, we have Jane's Addiction, 3 Days.
Which is one of mine.
Colin scored it 8, Ian 14, and Tracy 16.
I thought Tracy would be really conflicted on this one, because, like, torn between your love of Perry Farrell and your absolute hatred of noodling.
Yeah.
Well, despite having a larger-than-life semi-naked Perry Farrell at the foot of my bed, I wasn't really into this album. I love Nothing Shocking, but I didn't really listen to them a lot.
I prefer Ritual de la Herbitual of the two. But I think that might be because that's the one I got first. I got it because of Being Caught Stealing, obviously, being their hit. But this, ever since I got it, this 3 Days has been my favourite track. I like epic tracks. And this is like the longest track on the album. And I mean, Eric
It was the longest on the entire playlist.
Yeah.
Which is Eric just Aves weird, right?
Yeah, because. Well, most of the stuff that Ian likes that's really long wasn't released yet.
Yeah,
at that point. But yeah, the Eric Avery's bass part's fucking fantastic, and then obviously, I think the solos are Navarro's best work on this one. Saw them do it live at Leeds Festival 2001 or 2002, and it was highlight of the set. And yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Loved it
because it's great. Right, next one.
So joint with that one is Ministry and So What.
Oh, what?
So What Live.
Live, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and it was a bit of a sneaky one, but, you know, I don't care.
I think entirely justified. So What, the album version came out a few years prior to this, but the live version on, in case you didn't feel like showing up, is the definitive version, so much so that it's the version that Ministry put on the their Greatest Fits compilation. So I would say it's, if not my favourite, it's in my top three Ministry tracks with NWO and The Fall.
Yeah.
They sort of alternate.
Filth Pig itself. Oh, Filth Pig is so good.
Yeah, I really like The Fall because I really like the piano on it with the delay. That was the first time I ever noticed delayed piano, but this has got loads of delay on it in a similar way.
Yeah.
And it's when they're getting a bit sort of dub-influenced is when I really dig it. Bela Lugosi's Dead.
It is a little bit Bela Lugosi's Dead in places. And yeah. It's just such a good fucking track.
I never really listened to them. I mean, I totally understand the importance of Ministry. Yeah, but the reason is, Headhunter was a regular at the indie discos I went to at that point.
Right.
And I don't recall Ministry ever getting played at the same nights.
Right.
So
that was their token industrial track.
Yeah. Well, I think in the industrial genre, I always leaned more towards the new wave side. You know, more like Cabaret Voltaire or Leather Nun.
Yeah, early Ministry.
Yeah, Twitch.
Yeah,
that was very new wave. Helen, did we get the score breakdown for this one?
No, you didn't. No. So, Colin gave it 18, Ian gave it 10, and Tracy gave it 10.
Ah, that's a bloody respectable score.
Yes.
So, what have we got next?
So, top three.
Yeah.
At number three, we have Sonic Youth, Cool Thing.
Cool? What's the... so that's one of Tracy's.
Yep. Colin gave it 19. Ian gave it 17. Tracy gave it 3.
Cool.
Fucked yourself there, Tracy.
I know, I did.
This is probably my top two Sonic Youth songs. It's either this or Teenage Riot for me.
It's Kim Gordon at her fucking coolest.
It is. It's absolutely... she's cool as fuck on this track. This is where Chuck D's wandered off to, which is why he wasn't on the Public Enemy track. And
yeah,
I mean, Goo is a fucking brilliant album all the way through. And they did videos for every single track, so I bought there was a Sonic Youth DVD with all their music videos that came out years ago, and I bought that, and I don't think I owned Goo yet at that point. But it meant that I knew every track off Goo because they'd done videos for all of them, so they were all on the DVD in sequence.
Yeah.
So I then went out and bought that.
What was the video that Kathleen Hanna was in the video?
Bull in the Heather.
Yeah.
Which is on Evol, I think.
Yes.
That's another utterly brilliant up there. That's definitely top five for me. But, yeah. Sonic Youth are fucking brilliant. Kim Gordon is the coolest person in the fucking universe, and this is her at her coolest.
Okay, so am I right in thinking this is the first time you've had a joint number one?
Oh, fucking hell it is.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So I had actually predicted the number one correctly then, but I don't know what the other one is. Oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Cool, both mine.
Yeah. Yep, so we have...
So, hold on.
Oh, okay.
Tracy, which one did you think was number one?
Delight.
Right, I thought Depeche Mode.
Depeche Mode.
So, yeah. Helen, what are the scores and tings?
So, yep, Delight, Groove is in the Heart. Colin gave it 3. Ian gave it 18. And Tracy gave it 19.
Yep.
And Depeche Mode, Enjoy the Silence. Colin gave it 10. Ian gave it 19. And Tracy gave it 11.
So they've both got how many points?
40.
40 points each.
If we were still doing the bonus points, Delight would have won because that had my bonus.
But it may not have done because I don't know what I would have done with the bonus ones then.
Yep.
So,
well, true.
I'd just like to point out these are both my picks. So let's talk about.
So you win.
Let's talk about Delight first. Daisy Age pop fucking genius, built around a sample of "Bring Down the Birds" by Herbie Hancock. But you've also got Maceo Parker and Fred Wesley on horns, so they're funk legends. Bootsy Collins is on there, not playing bass. Although he might have played it on the original track, but he's on vocals. And then Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest doing the rap. They're one-hit wonders, but what a fucking great hit.
Yeah, it's a hell of a hit to do.
It's just brilliant. Yeah.
It brings back such huge memories from my first term at university.
It would do, yeah. But it was everywhere.
This on the dance floor.
Yeah. Awesome. And it's, yeah... It's another one where I don't know any of their other songs, but I don't think I need to.
But it's... In fact, this one is still guaranteed to get me on the dance floor.
Oh, God, it's for pretty much everyone. You can, if you're DJing anywhere, you can play this and it will fucking fill the floor. So the other track, obviously, that was joint number one is Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode, which is the one I thought it would be. It's one of the best pop songs ever written. It's Stadium Goth genius, and it's definitely in my top two Depeche Mode songs, along with It's No Good, and they just sort of alternate between which one I prefer at the time.
Well, it opens like a New Order song.
Yeah. I can see that.
So much.
But it's so good. Obviously, I didn't know it at the time. I've heard it a little bit over the years, but then I properly got into Depeche Mode in probably about 2000-ish, so I was about 10 years late. But, yeah.
I mean, I still prefer the Vince Clarke era.
I really don't.
No, you're a twat.
Is the Depeche Mode episode of our podcast still the most downloaded one?
I think so. I would have to check the stats, and now they're in two different places because we changed hosting providers, so it's not that easy to check. But I believe so. It definitely was for a very long time. I think Depeche Mode fans tend to search for Depeche Mode mentioned in tags and then download things.
Are they a thing? Do they have like? Are they like Trekkies? Are they Modies? Actually, probably not, because then people would think they'd support the Prime Minister of India.
I don't know if there is a term for Depeche Mode fans. I've not particularly heard one. Perhaps if our podcast hosting label mates from We Buy Records are listening, they can let us know, because Paul on that podcast is a very big Depeche Mode fan, so... let us know.
Yes, please. Yeah. Are you a Modi?
Or yes.
Depeche.
Helen has just looked it up, and yes, they are Modis. She's just looked up list of fandom names, and that's come up there. The other ones that it's come up with, bizarrely, are the Denmark national football team, who are Roligans. Delta Goodrum is the Tribe, and Demi Lovato is the Love Attics. That's such a fucking random assortment.
It is.
Considering she searched what are Depeche Mode fans called. See, why those other three
I'd
came
be maybe
up, I don't
like
know.
A Manic Depeche.
A little big of a D.
Isn't that better?
Yeah, Manic Depeche. Excellent. So, that is the end of this particular episode. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. We will be back with our normal programming next month, where we are still trundling through the alphabet for the last time. I believe
we've skipped loads of letters.
Skipped loads of letters, because fuck those letters. So we are on the letter L next time. So we will be discussing the Lemonheads. Lindisfarne.
Who?
Lindisfarne. Tracy probably likes them. They're a bit folky.
I do not.
I only know that they did Fog on the Time with
Gazza. If you say you don't like them, Gazza's going to turn up. Give you some fried chicken and go fishing with you.
With a fishing rod.
And then cry.
Yes.
And then cry. Yeah. See, you're getting all fucking confident and joining in now, are you, Helen? Right. Shall we down here next? You've got to listen to a load of Limp Bizkit records for next month if you're going to turn up, Helen.
Yeah.
And you have to learn what the Matthews Bridge is as well.
Yes, take it to the Matthews Bridge, because we'll be talking about Limp Bizkit as well, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Have we nominated anyone to find out what the Matthews Bridge is? Because
it's a bridge in Jacksonville. Which is where they're from. But we'll get into that more next month.
Yeah. Discussion about why Fred Durst wants John Otto to go there.
Yeah, to take it to the Matthews Bridge. Yes, okay. Brilliant. We've been Weedig Music. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.
Another endearingly shambolic podcast from WeedigPodcasts.com.
Elsewhere on We Made This. The Movie Palace.
Anyway, I mean, what kind of aspects of his films do you really enjoy? Because obviously we're speaking now, you know, decades after the fact. But, you know, the great thing is many of his films do continue to kind of resonate and stand up tremendously well today. So, yeah, what is it you like about Hitchcock?
There's so much I like about him.
Yeah.
Where do I start? He's just, you know, I think I was actually having this discussion with my mom the other day because, as I said, she's the only one who ever really wants to watch these films with me. And I said to her, I think what he was particularly great at was showing how small people's lives actually can be. You know, like the minutia.
We played this.
There is this disability advocate called Sam Bosworth, who is a really avid gamer, who does talk a lot about accessibility of games and about how people shouldn't be shamed for wanting an easy mode.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be a controversial topic in the gaming community. And also how, I can't remember what the game was, but there was this, I think it was a PS2 game, was it? I can't remember. It wasn't PS2, it was PS4. But basically you had to use pedals for this ride, for this driving game, and he can't do that. So they had to basically find a way to, like, you know, like, alter the game themselves.
Yeah.
The developers didn't think about that.
The Time Is Now, a Millennium podcast.
Rating has been for this episode, and if not, would you like to hazard a guess?
I gotta admit, Kurt, that I am kind of cheating because I have the page open.
I like that you're only kind of cheating. I like that it's not really cheating. It's,
you know, it's... Well, it wasn't intentional cheating, but, you know, now that you ask, you know, my guess is, like, it's probably like an 8.9 is my guess, you know.
Yeah, and would you guess around 440 people voted?
Yeah, probably around there, yeah.
I tell you what, you're bang on. It is the best rated episode of Millennium.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.